This is Ethel Thompson of Dipper Harbor, and the following is an historical review by Mrs. Bessie Perkins of LaPro.
I was telling about the soldiers that were stationed here. I don't know. The barracks, they had a big hotel. They had this big hotel that we called the Square. It was right across, well, I was going to say from the railway station, but there's no railway station there now. It was across the tracks, and there was a quite a large square. It was what we always called the Square, and this big hotel was there, and they had the barracks, and that's where the soldiers were stationed. And they, I don't know too much, only that the only thing I could remember was that this man was supposed to have deserted. And in those days, if a deserter, if there was a deserter and they caught them, they'd be shot. And this man did desert, and they caught him. I can't tell you who it was, I had no idea. But Miss Stafford, that's the old lady, Mrs. Sam Stafford, her name was, she went out and she got on her knees and pleaded for that man's life. And they finally did let him go. I never knew what happened to him. But yes, I've heard that was told to me. Of course, I would remember, but I remember being in the barracks where the soldiers used to be. Of course, at that time, everything was, you know, there wasn't anything there much, you know. It was just an empty building. And they had a less, I was wondering the other day about how long a post office was here in the Pro. It was, when I was a very little girl, there was a post office in that building, the old hotel, and Dr. Reynolds was the postmaster. Mm-hmm. And I remember the building was pretty well, you know, dilapidated. And I can remember the floor going down, you know, the lobby of the floor scrolled up like this. And I can remember going there, especially Valentine Day, looking for Valentine's. I was very, very small then, so I can't think how many years. But it must be 100 years since there was a post office here anyway. But before Dr. Reynolds had it, I can't tell you who it was. He was here, postmaster, for quite a long time.
Who took over from him?
When my father had it afterwards, after he died, he was postmaster for a while. But then when he died, I took the office over. It was a kind of a hard job because I didn't know very much about the work. I'd been in St. John. I had gone to the business college there, and I intended to work at St. John. But I came home when he died. So I took over from there.
What year?
It would be, let's see, he died in 1918. It's around there, you know, 1819.
And you lost a brother in the First War?
I lost a brother in the First War, and I had another brother very badly wounded. And I had three nephews in the last war. And my husband was in the First World War. He was like my brother. He enlisted when he was 15.
Yeah.
His father got him out of the army though, but he went right back and enlisted again. So he let him go the last time.
Was he overseas?
Oh yes. Oh yes, they're both overseas, yes. he was wounded too, but, you know, not as badly as my brother. And my nephews, I had a nephew in the Cape Breton Highlanders, Cameron Sim, he was captain, and another nephew, I have to stop thinking, he was in the American Army, in the Air Force, he was,
it was a pilot, he was an air crew, checking the planes
or something, I forget now what it was, it was.
Like maintenance?
No, I can't think it was, but he was a lieutenant in that. And then my other brother, my other nephew was he was in the Navy, so they took all the branches, but they were, the two of them were in the American forces, and my other brother, of course, my nephew was at the Cape Breton Islanders, but I guess there's, our family went back a long time in the Army. I don't know, it seems funny that, you know, I was thinking today, there's a chap I knew years and years ago, and whatever made me think about his name come back to me. I had thought of him for years and years. I knew him, he was in the same battalion my brother was in. And I knew him, and I hadn't seen him, I suppose, took your 60 years. And I was going to the other, I said, funny, I wonder whatever happened to him. He probably is dead by now. But that name seemed to come back to me.
What was the name?
His name was Bowman, Bob Bowman. He was, oh, yeah. He was, I understood afterwards, he didn't say too much, but I found out that he was in the British intelligence.
I see.
And so I don't know whatever happened to him, but he was from somewheres in Europe.
Yeah.
And his family, his whole family were slaughtered, you know, with the Germans.
Yeah.
Those were pretty awful. But I haven't seen him since I was just a young girl, you know, I suppose. I just happened to meet him. But it seems so strange that that name should keep coming back to me.
Now, when your parents came, did your parents emigrated, did they?
No. She was born in New York. But she was brought up in Amherst. Her family, her parents died, my grandparents died when she was very young. And she was only 4 years old, I think. And a family by the name of Moore brought her up. And I think probably that's where she met Paul, but he was over there at one time. And she came here to visit Grandma. And while she was here, they decided to get married, the two of them. So that was how she happened to be here. But he was born in St. George. But he was brought up in England.
Yeah.
He went across to England. My great-grandfather had sailing ships in those days, you know. And he went across to England on those sailor ships, and he lived with my great-grandfather and went to school over there. And I don't know just how old he was when he came here. You know, he was pretty well grown up when he got his schooling. But they said that when he first went to school, the children, they told them that there was a little Canadian boy coming to go to school. And when he came in, they said, well, he's white. They thought he was an Indian.
Oh.
but he adapted himself. He was only 7 years old when he went over. Just imagine taking a trip like that on one of those boats at that age. But every 6 months, they'd take pictures of them, send them over. And they were so cute, some of them. You know, the rigs he wore in those days.
Yeah.
But he loved the sea. Yeah. And it was too bad. I mean, he never seemed to like to stay on land. He was never as happy on him. He always would have liked to go back to sea, but he didn't.
He stayed here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The family was growing up. And he figured the best thing to stay home.
I imagine his wife thought so too.
Oh, yes. I guess we were quite a handful.
What was La Proa like? Were there many houses here, and what was the industries?
No, there were. Well, down towards the cemetery, down that way, there was quite a few houses, yes. Yes, but none up this way. There was no houses up here at all. This is all woods along here. And that over there was a, they always called it the old farm. I think probably at one time it was a farm, because they had a big barn and things, and that's where they had picnics over there. You know, they come from St. John. There'd be special trains come down.
What kind of picnics?
There'd be church picnics and different times, you know, but they'd come down, they'd have an auxiliary train come down and bring the people and their equipment and stuff and everything. And then, oh, there'd be hundreds of people come down. They'd have bands and everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. They'd be here all day long, you see. One day there was a color picnic come down.
Yeah.
And I don't remember. I remember some of the other ones, but I don't remember that color picnic. But I think they're a pretty lively lot.
A lot of music and singing?
Well, imagine, because they're very musical.
Yes.
Color people are.
Yes.
Yes, they're very musical. Well, I guess they all enjoy themselves. But
would they have races for the picnic?
Oh, yes, they'd have everything, you know, things like that. And probably they'd have Wheels of Fortune and things like that, you know, that get a little bit of money.
And fortune tellers. Did they have fortune tellers in those days?
I don't know, but they might have had in some of them. I don't think the colored ones perhaps did. But they'd have booths all around, you know, that they would have different games and things. And they'd usually have ball teams come down, and they'd have their bands and everything.
What was the main industry here?
Well, in my time, it was mostly sawmills. Andy Gregory had a sawmill here for 25 years. He cut wood, he'd cut lumber. He'd have a crew of men, and they were wild hawks too. And when their payday come around, they'd go to St. John and get a lot of liquor. And they'd come back stone drunk. And of course, there would be no work in the mill. So Mr. Gregory would go up and he'd bail them out, you know, they'd get arrested. And they'd bail them out and bring them down and put them to work again. And he kind of cut them off a little bit from the liquor, but I think it was my brother, they got hold of him to get some liquor for them. So he did, I think they had, I got a load of it and what they call the tank. Between here and Muscourse, there are planks that they used to get the water for the power for the train and That's where they used to unload the liquor, and they'd go up and get it, you know. And Mr. Gregory come up in my face. Mr. Carroll, he said, "Charlie, shut the mill down." He got all the men drunk. Oh, I guess it was terrible in those days. But they'd get off and have a good time, and then he'd have to go up and bail them out again and bring them back. I remember one day there was one old fellow. We had a bedroom down there. We were living in the station at the time, and down on the lower part there was one room. There was a bedroom, and he came in and climbed in there and went to sleep in the bed. You couldn't do anything. You had to let him sleep it off. But there were wild lot in those days. We used to call them the chain gang, but oh dear me.
Well, did they vandalize or do any?
No, they would do no harm.
No, they just. They were their own worst enemies.
Oh, yes, they were just having a good time for themselves. But they. We got that time. Charlie, he got out of sight. Charlie sucked the mill down. He couldn't. None of the men was fit to work. But he got a lot of work to people here. Well, then there were sawmills after that, but I can't remember. But there were a lot of industries here at one time. There was a furniture factory.
Who made the furniture?
I don't know who the people were, but I saw a couple of spoon beds that they made, and they were beautiful. Beautiful beds. I would give them that if I had one myself. And they had there was a brickyard down the door. See, they had no way of transporting things. They had boats. I think they must have had that place the channel that goes up there below the falls. I think that it was, it must have been opened up or something, you know, for boats to come in there. Because it seemed to me that's where they used to load things,
yeah.
You know, lumber and stuff. And the Simpson's Brush Factory started this business down here. I can't tell you just whereabouts they started, but it's down here somewhere.
Was this a branch of the Sims in St. John?
The St. John people, yes. Yeah, they're the ones that, the same people that started here.
And was there a shoe factory at one time?
There's tannery here, down there where the station used to be.
Where did they get the hides? Was this from wild animals?
I don't know where they get that.
Clam factory.
Oh yes, there was two clam factories. Mm-hmm. Yes, the clam factory and the La Crow, they had a one down there, Brown Brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they won the a gold medal here in Paris for the clams. That's great. And I don't think anybody ever got the secret to that. They were beautiful,
yes,
really.
They
were beautiful clams. They were very light, very clean looking, and just the right size, you know. But that was one of the things that they used to do is dig clams. There was a big business at one time.
Yeah.
They'd have in some of those what they call basin clams, they're great big ones like that.
Yes.
And they'd send those to the chowder houses in St. John, and they'd take grind those up. See, they'd shell them and send them as they are, but they're so big, you know, they couldn't do their chowders. So they just took those and ground them up.
Yeah.
And they used to ship a lot of that. St. John. Well, then they ship the clams in barrels, you know, for steam clams.
Yeah.
But I don't know now. It's hard to get a clam.
Yes. Red bean. What did women do? Did they were really housewives?
Oh, yes, yes, in those days, yes. There was much that they could go on and help somebody else, you know, around the house or something or other like that. But no, they there was nothing else for them to do in the place. They had to work in the garden, possibly. And we used to have quite a few Indians here at one time. Off and on, you know, they'd be some. There was one family that, when I went to school, there was a family of Indians. They tell me every one of those Indians died. It was a big family, though, too.
Were they Mi'kmaqs, or...?
I don't know. They're the Mi'kmaq or Palisades. I can't remember now. All I remember when I was a little girl, I used to go over, I'd take Christmas time, take a basket or something over to them. And they'd be sitting on the floor. They wouldn't sit in there. There was no chairs or anything. But, you know, they seemed to just eat off the floor. And I remember them sitting there. Making baskets or making axe handles, what they usually did. They used to make some beautiful baskets too.
Do you have any of their baskets?
I have a big clothes basket in there, but it's this man, we always call him the old trapper. I never knew what his name was. I know it was Sam Chinook. Somebody tell me it was Sam. But I know my sister was married. He made this beautiful big basket for her, you know, for her wedding gift. Poor old father. He lived alone. He used to call him the hermit. He lived by himself.
And you still have it?
The basket, yeah.
About how old would it be?
What did you say?
How old is it?
The basket would be... let me see, Muriel was married in 1910. That would be 72 years.
Yeah.
And it's pretty rugged yet.
Yes, I think.
I don't use it because it's too big and comfortable. I don't need another big basket now. We did have odd people around here that just took him out of it.
Can you tell about some of them?
A bed lodge up the road here. He used to play at all the dances, but he was just, well, I don't know, and he was so crazy as he was cute. I know one day he got standing in the middle of the track playing his violin, and dared the train to run over him. They stopped the train. They didn't dare run over him. I don't know what he did for. He did till he got tired and walked away. But he used to do some funny things.
And what was his name?
Ned Lodge.
Lodge?
Ned Lodge, yes. Yeah. And he used to play for the dances here. He was a colored man, but he married a white woman.
Mm. And did they have a family?
Yes, they did. They had... I forget, quite a few children. One man was awfully nice, and he was, the others were kind of dark, but this fellow was, what was his name, I was just trying to think. There was young Benny Lodge. He used to call his wife Keno.
Why?
Keno, yes. And he'd bury his money. He was cute, all right.
Did he ever? Did people find it? Or
I don't know. They said he used to put in tin cans and bury it, whether he did or not. He probably just said that, but he was just a little bit off anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the old fellow, the father was, I don't know. Whether he was just a little bit queer or whether he just put on an act. Yeah, but I know He stopped the train up there one day. Yeah, I don't know what the reason he stopped it, but he got in the middle of the track playing the violin anyway. So they didn't dare run over. They finally got him off. Lynn, his sister-in-law, Annie Berry, she was another odd person. She was scared deaf of men.
Yeah.
And she was the boy down here, Anna Taylor's down, Hazen's mother and father are there. And she they said there's a pair of pants of Henry's hanging in the bedroom. And she took a long stick and put on the end of the pants on the end of the stick and threw it over the banisters up and down the stairs. She was afraid to have it in the room. And if she and man come along, she turned her back.
Yeah.
But poor Annie. And she traveled back and forth on the train. You know, they said not to bother. They finally had to stop her from doing it. They wouldn't charge her anything, you know, they said they let her go. She was a harmless creature.
Yeah.
Well, then there was another family, the Shays. Again, Nick Shea and Kate. And I think he's another one who's a wise fool because I think Nick knew more than they gave him credit for. But they used to torment the heart out of that poor fellow. It was a shame, you know. My brother was about the biggest torment of any of them. He'd tease that poor man. I don't know, he died in some home, although I think they had to take care of the last. But he used to go around, he'd had a baby carriage, and he'd wheel knickknacks and odds and ends, you know, and sell them, just to give him something to do. But his sister was not nearly as smart as he was. She was really gone or so.
And yet they were all looked after, even in those days, were they?
What'd you say?
They were all looked after.
Oh yes. They never wanted for anything. And everybody knew them, you know, and they would be good to them. Managed to get along.
What did people do to socialize? Like, what did you do?
We used to have dances and parties and things like that, you know, and get together, and all of a sudden, Dr. Clark was here. We used to laugh at her and said, in half an hour, Don't get a dance or a party going. Wouldn't take any time to get the crowd together, but we used to get together. There was one, I know one street named Ronald's Avenue, but I don't know which way, whether it was another way or not, but the streets were laid out and they were all named.
Who but laid it out?
I don't know, but that all I can remember is that that they had it all listed as they were as they were going along. Well, as the industries started to drop off, I suppose the population dwindled too, and I don't know, the things seemed to go down, one business and then the other one failed, and finally the lumbering business was the last thing that they had here. And they did a big business. Mr. Gregory did a big business here. He had a big lumber mill, and shipped a great deal of lumber out of the place. Yeah. They had a siding that switched off down there towards the falls, you know, down that way. And, the train, it was a bad accident here one day. There was one of the workmen forgot to close the track. They've been shutting down into the siding, and instead of that, he had closed the punch card, and the train ran into the there was, I think, carloads of timber or something. Anyway, the engine went in, and I know they had a semi auxiliary train down. Nurses and doctors. They had one man was badly scalded. Another man had his hand taken off. He started to jump out the window, and his overalls caught something. He went down head first. His hand went out of the tracks. Took part of his hand off. And another man, the conductor, something happened to his tongue, and they had to remove his tongue. And it was a long time. It was a, I don't know how it could have happened, but it was an oversight on the part of one of the brakemen, I suppose, that didn't close the switch. See, he left it open, and the thing went right down into the siding instead of on the main highway, on the main mile.
Would he lose his job over that?
Oh, I imagine probably yes. Oh yes, they'd have an inquiry into it and everything.
About when would that be?
I'm just trying to think. George Green was the conductor that time on the road. He was the one that
lost his tongue.
Oh, a nice man too. And I can't remember who the crew were on the engine. But it made an awful mess there for a while. I know the engineer or the fireman, one of them was very badly scalded. So they sent another train right down to St. John with the doctors and nurses. Did what they could for them. I guess they both got all right again. I mean, they didn't die or anything, but it was a busy place there. There was a lot of work. A lot of work for local people, you know, as well as I said, this chain gang that I used to bring down. I've been to St. John's after I'd started my work down here. I'd been to St. John and come down that morning at the train. It was storming. And they couldn't get any farther. They come up with such a blizzard that the road was blocked. And they were here from the 8th of March till the 23rd of April, I think, before they could open this line. Well, they sent another train, an auxiliary train from St. McAdam. See, they come around this way from St. Stephen. And the engine went off the track right up here on the turn. So that was made it a little bit bad. But you see, the other engine down below, they had to have coal to keep the boiler going. And that's what they were setting down, the coal, is to give them the fuel. And they used to have to take that, they had Slovens and team managed to get the roll open here and take it down to the train. And they used to laugh, they said that they thought the crew would be on the line before they were through because, you know, they were getting more than double time, they were getting triple time while they were held up. But the trouble was it made it bad because there was a lot of people, quite a few passengers. We had some stay at our place. And the food was getting low. But they had things on the train. And we got quite a lot, whatever supplies they had on the train, we could use those. And then there was a man at St. John, the mail, of course they had to get the mail through. And he used to had a nose loving and an old poor old horse. I don't know what time he'd start in the morning, but he'd come down with all the mail. And he'd bring provisions, you know, if he can, for people on his way down. And I remember I used to have to get that mail all sorted and ready to go out and get ready, the other mail ready to go at 6 o'clock next morning, because it took them all day to go on the mine. He was a sturdy old fellow. Yeah. Just imagine going into St. John and taking a day to go into St. John and doing half an hour now. But that was a very bad day, weather. That was a very bad storm. Snow was right up to the telephone wires.
And you said you had a brother drowned in Pocalogan?
No, he was drowned right down here.
Oh, down here, yeah.
I was seeing that boy that was drowned, that Waycott boy that was drowned. I imagine the Boudon is the same place. It's the river is shallow down there. There is, but there's one spot, what we always call the deep hole. And there's a big rock that the boys used to dive on, you know. And I suppose that must have been where he went in. And he went right down.
How old was it?
My brother. Mm-hmm. He was 7 years old. And another little girl drowned down. A little Melvin girl was drowned right down here. But she was drowned down here off the gully a little bit, I think.
Was she a LaProbe girl too?
Yes. Yes, she lived there. I don't know. It's good for the children to learn to swim. That's one thing about the kids around here. From the time they're able to walk, they go down and live down there in the swimming hole. And they all learn to swim.
Yes.
Which is a good thing. But
did you learn to swim?
I never learned to swim. They never allowed me to go near the water. My sister and myself. But the boys did. They go in there. I never learned to swim. You know, they say it's strange down there in Mesa's Bay that there's not a very few people down there who can swim. And living right on the water all the time. I wish I could swim, because it's something that most everybody should have.
But, yes. What are some of your happiest memories of living in LaProbe?
Well, happy, that's my nature, I guess, a happy nature. I don't know. The day I was married, maybe.
Yes.
I remember they had I was married in Trinity Church in Mesa Bay. And they had an arch, they made a beautiful arch, and they had it all decorated with flowers, you know. And I can remember poor Mr. McMahon, he was standing on that arch, and there was a streamer of flowers hanging down over one shoulder, and I kept watching. I kept loving Hank. And so I went to put the ring on my finger, and I think my head must be a little hot or something, other warm. And the ring sort of stuck, and I started laughing about getting the ring on. It didn't go very far our honeymoon, because I was a little uneasy about my sister-in-law, St. John. I knew she was to go into the hospital most any time she expected a new baby. And I was quite uneasy because she had a hard time the time before. So we only stayed a few days. We only went as far as Portland. But the baby arrived the day we were married.
Oh, it did?
Yeah. Poor little thing. One little girl, too. We were very, very fond of her. Yeah, poor little thing. She just graduated from high school. And she went up this evening. for a little drive with some friend of hers, and he was showing her a new car. They got a new car. And they had an accident. She was killed.
I'm sad.
She was a lovely little girl, too. Yes, it was. It was a shame. She just graduated from high school. Two of them, they're almost the same age. There were a difference in their ages, of course, but they seem to be about the same size. Jill, she always went to Cy, but Norma always came to me. She was my girl.
Now, are there any more Perkins? Is it an old name in La Brea?
No. I think there's a Perkins family down New River Beach.
Yeah.
And there's another one in Chance Harbor, I believe.
Would they be connections?
No relation, no. Yeah. No. That's what the people were. I think Mr. Perkins told me that they were English or something. My husband's brother died a short time before Cy did, and there were just the two boys in the family. Mr. Perkins died just before, short time before we were married.
Yeah.
And there was just the two sons in that family.
Were there many loyalists? Were there many United Empire loyalists in La Brea?
Oh yes, I belong there. I'm one of the tribe.
Yes.
Yeah, my grandmother's a Wetmore. She's from New York. But I never think very much about it. Of course, there's so many Empire loyalists around.
Yes.
I tried to get a little information. I wrote to New York, you know, to see if I get some of the records over there, some things I wanted to find out. But they told me that, I suppose, during the war, the things were destroyed, the records were, as he said, everything was been burned and destroyed. I've been down that way too, you know. I'd like to go to some of the cemeteries.
Yes.
And checked on the stones.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah. I had the history of the Wetmore history, the six generations, but whatever become of it, I don't know. I had for a long time.
Are you connected to the Wetmores of Fredericton?
Of the Wetmores? I think I don't suppose any close connection, but I think we're all connected somewhere out there. You know, I think they're Empire loyalists too.
Yes, they are. Yes.
Yeah.
Now, did you ever see a ghost?
Now you tell them. Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know if I was walking home or not. I walked through the old covered bridge. And this thing, it seems, blew right out in front of me. And I don't know, it gave me a start, but I didn't say too much. I thought people think I'm crazy. But I did see something there. It was a shadow or something.
Did your mother see it too?
It's dark. No, she didn't see it. No. I never said anything about it, but there's something there that seemed to loom up in front of me. It could be a little bit of vapor or something, you know, that forms or something. I don't think that it was really a ghost. They used to say there was up here going towards St. John, about a mile up. There used to be, they said there was somebody murdered there. And they said it was supposed to be haunted, but I think it was just old women's tales. I don't think it's haunted. do anything, you know. But I know years ago there was a lot of people who believed that. And some of the young people, they wouldn't go by that place without somebody with them. They figured, thought it was haunted. But I never saw anything. The only thing is that night I was going through the bridge. I don't know whether it was something, my eyes had clouded up or something or another, something that caused it. But it just seemed really like a vapor, just something that lay in gray cloud and then disappeared. I don't think I was drinking anything that night. Just see things. Years ago, of course, that, you know, things. They were very superstitious about
people.
Yes,
they were.
They would believe in these things. But going down this camp and have people pull the bedclothes off and things like that, you know. I think that the people used to make these stories up, and as it went along, it got bigger and bigger, you know. I don't think there's anything. I don't believe ghosts, as far as that goes.